It's the Brian Mara Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And forget about Trump and Putin for a minute. Let's talk about Cuomo and Nixon. In less than 2 months, New York State will have a primary in which the main question will be, can Nixon do to the Cuomo machine what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez did to the Joe Crowley machine in Queens? A Quinnipiac poll released yesterday shows Cuomo with a 36-point lead, and that is up from a 22-point lead in the same poll in May. But Crowley also thought he was way ahead. There was one poll that showed him 35 points ahead in that race. And of course, he wound up losing. And with an energized progressive base right now, nothing is impossible. Some relevant headlines in recent days. Fundraising numbers released this week show Cuomo with a lot more money taken in, but Nixon is taking in hers via the Bernie Sanders, Ocasio-Cortez route, small donors, no fat cats, while the Cuomo campaign got caught, did you hear this week by the press, trying to fake how small their average donation is. For example, we mentioned yesterday that one guy who lives with a Cuomo campaign staffer gave $1 to the campaign 67 different times. Some very rich corporate Cuomo supporters have also given $1 or $5. It seems like they were asked to do that to bring down the average donation for publicity sake. And last week, the governor's economic development guru, Alan Colyeros, was convicted on federal corruption charges related to one of Cuomo's pet projects, the Buffalo Billions redevelopment. The next day, the governor proposed legalizing recreational marijuana in New York State, which many saw as a way to change the subject quickly. Most news junkies in New York, probably including you, dear listener, were so consumed by Trump and NATO and the Putin summit and the Brett Kavanaugh Supreme Court nomination that none of these New York stories broke through as much as they might have anyway. And that's why we're leading with them today rather than Trump's latest flip-flops on whether Russia is meddling in the 2018 elections or things like that. We will assume for the moment that Vladimir Putin doesn't care very much one way or another whether Andrew Cuomo or Cynthia Nixon is governor of New York. Though I could be wrong. Joining me now, New York Times state politics correspondent, Vivian Wang. Hi, Vivian. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi. Thanks for having me again.
Let me start with this conviction last week of Alain. Is that how you say his first name?
Yes, I believe so.
A-L-A-I-N. So looks Frenchish. His last name looks more Greekish.
I believe he's Romanian.
Romanian. Alain Colyeros, who you call the governor's economic development guru. For people not following this story, who is he? And what was he convicted of?
Sure. So the governor, his signature economic development initiative in his tenure has been dubbed the Buffalo Billion. It is not just focused on Buffalo. It's a general upstate revitalization initiative. And as the name implies, it involves a lot of money. And Alain Colyeros was the president of a nanotech institute upstate involved with SUNY, the state university system. He predated Governor Cuomo. He's actually served under several governors, but Governor Cuomo really elevated him, called him a genius, said that he was going to be the man leading the charge and making sure that upstate New York kind of got a second wind, you know, a second chance, especially its economy. But what we found out over the course of his trial was that he essentially rigged a bunch of the bids for the state contracts involved in this Buffalo Billion project and steered them towards various developers or development companies, partially, at least according to prosecutors, because he was so preoccupied and so worried about having the governor's ear and having the governor's goodwill that he was willing to listen to a lobbyist close to the governor.
So here's what the governor had to say about the conviction and whether it taints him.
I don't know what I could have done differently to prevent the situation. More, it's what do you do when you find the situation and you know about the situation, you know? Then how do you handle it?
And here's what Cynthia Nixon had to say.
The Cuomo administration has been 8 years worth of scandal, corruption, backroom deals, and pay-to-play politics. We can't clean up Albany until we clean out who is in the governor's mansion.
Now, the governor was not charged in this case, to be clear, but this does make two top officials very close to Cuomo convicted of corruption this year. The other was the conviction in March of the governor's overall right-hand man, Joe Prococo, who Cuomo has described as like a brother of his and like his father, Mario Cuomo's third son. Again, the governor was not charged, but to use a Trumpism, Vivian, what the heck is going on?
Yeah, so to steal, I guess, a line from the Cynthia Nixon spiel about this, either Governor Cuomo has actually known what's been going on despite his protestations and his denials and is not being truthful with New Yorkers, or he truly has been totally unaware of what's been going on in his office among his closest advisors. And as Ms. Nixon has pointed out, either one would seem to be pretty problematic. You know, you could say that he's asleep at the switch. So you know, it depends on which narrative you choose to believe or which narrative seems more convincing, but it certainly speaks, I think, to a larger concern that Albany in general is just rife with corruption and rife with this idea that if you have enough money or influence, you can get what you want.
And of course, the former Republican State Senate Majority Leader, Dean Skelos, just got reconvicted of his corruption charges or on his corruption charges this week. Nobody says that touches Cuomo, I don't think.
No, neither the reconviction of Dean Skelos or of Sheldon Silver earlier this year had, you know, anything to do with the governor. But again, it speaks to this larger culture.
And that it hasn't been fixed, even though Cuomo ran on fixing it in his first race. So next subplot, can you explain the fundraising numbers that came out this week for Cuomo and Nixon and what the trickery is that the Cuomo campaign seems to have been caught in?
I think the Cuomo campaign seems to be recognizing, as many quote-unquote establishment Democrats seem to be recognizing both in New York and across the country, that there is this grassroots energy, there is at least this liberal base that says, you know, no corporate money, no big donations, we want to see candidates who are supported by the people, as you mentioned, as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's victory demonstrated. And I think there's this increasing pressure for campaigns of all liberal stripes to be able to demonstrate through their fundraising numbers, through, you know, whoever's endorsing or supporting them, that they aren't just career politicians, that they have small donor bases and, you know, blue wave energy behind them.
So this one guy, for example, written up in the Times, whose address is the same as a Cuomo staffer, a Cuomo campaign staffer, gave $1 67 different times. And I guess the point of that, at least implied, is that if he has 67 extra $1 donations in his coffers, then the average donation looks a lot lower than it really is.
I think that's the calculation there, yes. And when my colleague Shane Goldmacher asked the campaign about it, they said something along the lines of, we'll put in a different accounting mechanism in the future so that we can account for this. But, you know, at least in their initial release about his fundraising numbers, they were able to say, look at how many small donations we got, look at how low the average is.
And that might have been the most extreme example, but that was not the only example of people who presumably have a lot more money to give to the Cuomo campaign and want to see him elected for whatever interests they have, giving $1, $5, things like that.
Right. There were a couple donors, I believe, who gave different sums. So there was the $1 or the $5 donation, but then there was also the donation of a couple hundred or a couple thousand dollars.
What are Cuomo and Nixon's actual policies with respect to whose money they will accept? Do you know?
So Cynthia Nixon has said she is not going to accept corporate money. Whereas Andrew Cuomo has not said he's going to do that. And as we've seen, he's received large donations from corporations and from wealthy donors such as the Winklevoss twins. So Cynthia is really positioning herself, you know, aligning herself with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Zephyr Teachout and these various other candidates who have positioned themselves as very anti the way things are normally done.
Did you look at the Quinnipiac poll that came out yesterday? Cuomo up by 36 points, up from a 22-point lead in the same poll in May.
I did see that.
Joe Crowley, as I mentioned in the introduction, had a 35-point lead in a poll at one point over Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. So What do you make of even that poofy lead for Cuomo with almost 2 months to go?
I think we're seeing two very different narratives emerging, as you might expect from each campaign. So the Cuomo campaign is saying, look at this lead. New Yorkers are behind us. New Yorkers of so many different demographic stripes. He's leading among men and women, and he has such strong support among Black and Latino voters. And the narrative from the Nixon campaign is, look at the Crowley race, look at the Ocasio-Cortez race, and the people that this Quinnipiac poll was talking to, are not really representative of voters. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has made a big deal about turning out people who people thought weren't your usual voters and turning out a different base. And the Nixon campaign is saying, we're also going to turn out people who just aren't being polled.
So listeners, as we talk to New York Times state politics correspondent Vivian Wang, who has a question or comment about any of this, either the corruption convictions that are close to Cuomo, though he was not charged in those cases, or the fundraising policies or practices of Cuomo and Nixon, we can do a little informal, unofficial, thoroughly unscientific mid-July poll here of registered Democrats in New York State. Who would you vote for if the election were held today? 18% in that poll were undecided, so also interested to hear from those of you who are just starting to figure it out, because it's still early by most voter standards to get engaged in this, maybe not by many of you news junkies who listen to the show a lot, but by a lot of people out there. So anything on this? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And also joining us now with a few thoughts, including about a weird role the Working Families Party may force her to play in the Cuomo-Nixon race, is State Assembly member Deborah Glick of Lower Manhattan. She is also calling for a special session of the state legislature to vote on New York City speed cameras and extra protection for abortion rights in New York because of who the next Supreme Court nominee is. Hi, Assembly member. Welcome back to WNYC.
Very happy to be with you, Brian.
Want to tell us first what you're calling for in terms of a special session?
Well, we wouldn't call it a special session. We are calling on Senate Majority Leader John Flanagan to ask his members to return. That's happened many times in the past. A special session called by the governor would have both houses return. The Assembly has passed the Reproductive Health Act repeatedly, as well as been the leader on speed cameras in school zones. Both bills are my bills. And on Tuesday, we were joined by a wide range of organizations and advocates and some of my colleagues in government to call on John to bring the Senate back and pass bills that are live in their House. We don't need to have the Assembly return because we've already done our job.
So the speed camera issue has a real deadline with real potential safety ramifications.
Absolutely, July 25th.
Yeah, next week. So tell us about that.
It was a program that started out with a smaller number of cameras. It's up to 140, but as your listeners probably know, we have hundreds of schools, not just 140. And we have asked to expand the program. It has gotten whittled down to an additional 50 cameras a year, a very modest increase. But it is largely Simca Felder in Brooklyn who has been the obstacle, although Senator Golden and Senator Lanza in Staten Island and Golden in Brooklyn, who have been opposed as well. But now Senator Golden's gotten sufficient pressure and exposure of his own speeding violations so that he is now saying it would be right for them to return and put this continue this program. If it is not voted on by the Senate by the 25th, all of these speed cameras that are currently protecting school children, school staff, caregivers, parents, and neighborhood folks will go dark. And that would not just be a shame. It would be inviting true tragedy.
Is it that many Republicans say the speed cameras are really a speed trap. I think I've heard this, a source of revenue for the city, more than a safety measure around schools. Is that their objection? Because one might think, what's controversial about speed cameras around schools? This should just sail through.
Well, I think there are probably two or three ways of looking at it. First of all, both speed cameras and the red light cameras are actually there to modify behavior and have done so. Speeding in school zones are down 63%. There generally is a major drop-off in recidivism. People are aware of it. The bill would include a sign, 300 feet away that would warn that there's a speed camera. That was put in because of objections of some of the senators. And the buffer is 11 miles over the speed limit. So there is absolutely no reason. This has just become a bargaining chip for Simca Felder for things he wants for his district that have nothing to do with the speed camera program.
Yeah, and that sounds like a good idea, putting in a warning sign that you're approaching a speed camera district, because you don't want people to get caught speeding, because then they're still speeding around a school. So the point is, prevention. I get that. And what's the reproductive rights issue? I mean, abortion is legal in New York State with or without Roe at this time, isn't it?
Well, the reality is that currently there are people who, there are two issues. One is whether somebody is faced with an unintended and unwanted pregnancy, and the other is whether somebody has a wanted and desired pregnancy that goes terribly wrong. And needs medical attention. Currently, New York State law, abortion is in the criminal code. This would move it into the health code where it belongs. Abortion is a medical procedure, not a crime. The other issue is that our laws changed in 1970 when Roe v. Wade came in 1973. So there are protections that are attached to Roe that are not part of New York law. We protect the life of the mother, not her health. And with it in the criminal code and with this problem that it has to be life-threatening, not just threatening your health, women who have problems late in pregnancy have to leave the state. We had a patient advocate who had a horrible circumstance and at great expense and risk to her own health, she had to travel to Colorado. Women who do not have the resources could be risking their lives. And because it's in the criminal code, attorneys who are advising healthcare professionals and hospitals are delaying or denying care to New York's women today. It is obviously a real threat if we have a Supreme Court justice who undermines Roe entirely. But right now, today, there are things that need to change in New York's law.
New York State Assembly Member, Democrat Deborah Glick from Lower Manhattan with us talking about a couple of things. Now, in the governor's race, there's this scenario that's emerged, and tell me if I even have this right, that if Cuomo wins the Democratic primary, the Working Families Party will have to remove Cynthia Nixon from their ballot line so they don't risk splitting the progressive vote and electing a Republican as governor in November. But to do that legally, they would have to move Nixon to another race, and their race, their picking, seems to be against you. She would be the Working Families candidate against you as a Democrat. Do I even have the facts right?
Yes, right now they have a placeholder, a gentleman that I do not know, Doug Seidman, who is an attorney. And you can't get off the ballot after a certain point very easily. You have to die, be convicted of a crime, move out of the state, or run for a different office. And so they're solving their problem by creating potentially one for me.
Do you know if Nixon would actively campaign against you? Are they
she
doing this?
She has said she would not, but not to me directly, but I have seen that reported.
So are they doing this with your blessing in a way?
Well, you know, perhaps if they'd had a conversation with me earlier than a few hours before they filed their petitions, I might feel less insulted and disrespected. I had submitted a questionnaire, as I have in the past, to Working Families Party. It was a little bit late, so I flagged it for them, and when I said I had submitted it, their response was, "That's great," instead of, "Gee, we better talk." I fully expect that my record of accomplishment and her disinterest in being the assembly member will not affect my ability to be reelected, but, you know, it's crazy times, and, you know, nothing is a foregone conclusion.
Who are you endorsing in the Democratic primary for governor?
I haven't made an endorsement yet.
Will you?
I haven't made that decision.
That means you must be ambivalent between Nixon and Cuomo in some way, yes?
I think the governor has a strong record. If you list the his accomplishments, he has a very strong record. But I'm a legislator, and clearly there are issues that I have not had the opportunity to advance as I would have liked. So the governor and I have not had a conversation as of yet, nor have I had a conversation with Cynthia Nixon. Right now, all of my attention is turned to my own situation that has recently developed. You know, when you're at the end of session, you're not thinking about anything else but trying to get your accomplishments through. And since then, I've been focused on these two bills of mine that have passed the assembly and are crucial to people in New York, both the speed camera bill and the RHA.
I guess in a narrow sense, it would be good for you if Cynthia Nixon wins the gubernatorial primary, because then she won't be on the ballot against you for assembly.
Well, that certainly would be one outcome.
So one other issue before you go. The governor is now for legal recreational marijuana. Are you?
You know, I haven't thought tons about it. I think probably there doesn't make a whole lot of sense to continue to have it as a penalty and to allow it to be illegal. The question is, how do you prevent youngsters from having it? How do you deal with people? We already have a problem with drunk driving. We certainly don't want to have more of a problem with people driving under the influence. I'm very concerned about vehicular safety and pedestrian safety, as evidenced by the speed camera bill. But, you know, what would be the taxes? How would it be made available? So I am totally open to legalization, but the devil is in the details. So if a bill comes up, I would want to be certain that we were careful about how access was made available and how we deal with the ramifications of it being more widely used.
Democratic New York State Assembly Member Deborah Glick from Lower Manhattan, thanks for giving us a few minutes today.
Thank you very much, Brian.
And still with us, Vivian Wang, who covers New York State politics for The Times. And we'll get to a couple of your Cuomo versus Nixon calls in a minute. Vivian, what did you find interesting there with Deborah Glick? Anything?
So I have to admit, I didn't realize that the WFP had said that they were potentially going to cause some problems for her. Last I had heard about that, I think the Nixon campaign had kind of refused to say one way or another if they were going to stay on the ballot through November if they didn't win the primary. So I learned a lot just now.
How do you see the lay of the land for legal recreational marijuana in New York State now?
I think that My understanding from talking to people seems to be that there's very much a generational split. I think that it's possible a lot of the governor's hesitation in the past came from resistance among older voters to the idea, and I think older voters also tend to be pretty reliable primary voters. Whereas, you know, it's the same narrative that I talked about earlier. Cynthia Nixon's campaign is saying, we're going to really capitalize on the energy among a lot of younger voters who haven't necessarily been part of political calculations in the past, and they are behind this.
And this is a new position for the governor, who used to be against legal recreational. This is a case of Cuomo adopting a Nixon position that he used to oppose until she became a threat, right?
That's right. I believe his quote was, "The facts have changed around legal marijuana." He has cited, you know, the possibility or the reality of legalization in some of our neighboring states. But I think it's also pretty evident that a lot of his positions, not just on legal marijuana, have shifted a little bit left since Ms. Nixon entered the race.
Vicky in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hello, Vicky. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Brian. Good morning. I just wanted to identify myself as a progressive Democrat. I will be voting, and I am ambivalent, and sometimes I surprise myself, but definitely the issue of legalized marijuana is a major issue for me in creating my ambivalence. Mm-hmm. And I live in the Bronx. I'm raising my daughter in the Bronx, and we spend a fair amount of time in the park. She's 10, so I've been doing this for 10 years. And definitely since this conversation nationally has started around legalized marijuana, there is definitely a lot more open pot smoking everywhere I go. I mean, no, let me not say everywhere I go, but certainly in the parks. And I'm not saying it's a lot, but it's more. And, you know, what parent wants to take their kid to a park where teenagers usually are smoking marijuana? I mean, it's just, it's a turnoff. And that's like, and, you know, young people don't have a lot of places to go and smoke. Generally, their parents aren't going to say, sure, stay home and smoke. And I also think that the local press, I don't know, I guess I'm a little, I have two more things to say about this topic. Number one, I'm wishing that the local press could go and find some interesting places to talk to people about what does this mean. So I go to medical appointments around Columbia University. There's a homeless shelter in that area around the 168th Street subway stop. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times right around that subway station, there will be a lot of adults very openly smoking large quantities of marijuana. And that's a heavy density area, people moving in and out. And, you know, I care about criminal justice reform. I care about it as passionately as Cynthia Nixon, that's for sure. But I don't see this as the civil rights issue that it's being presented as. I don't think it's as a black and white civil rights issue as clearly as Cynthia Nixon identifies it. And I worry a little bit about the trendiness mm-hmm. of it.
Yeah.
But I also listen carefully to what your previous guests and what you guys have been saying, and that it may be the future. So pay attention to the future.
And of course, what some parents in the Bronx and elsewhere may think about this issue with respect to their kids is there's going to be less of a chance that their kids, as they are teenagers in New York City, wind up with a criminal record for nothing worse than smoking some marijuana themselves.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. So it depends on which parents you're talking to. But what I'm hoping is that the local press is going to be talking to parents and working people. You know, the people who work at Columbia University Hospital on 168th, it's a very diverse group of people. Mm-hmm. And how does that feel when there's open pot smoking? And I don't know enough about the issue. I'm sure there's ways to, you know, control it without, like, arresting people. But, you know, in our last mayoral election, when we changed mayors, you know, the big criminal justice reform was around dropping stop and frisk. To me, again, it wasn't totally clear, but that I felt so much more strongly about. It definitely was a big civil rights issue mm-hmm. for me, right. No doubt about it. And Bill de Blasio called it, and he called it correctly. He was 100% right on that issue. This issue, I'm a little less clear on.
Vicky, and, I gotcha. I'm going to move on for time. I thank you very much. Please call us again, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right. David, we're going to stay in the Bronx. David in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, David.
Hey, Brian, great to talk to you. I've always appreciated your voice on the radio.
Thank you.
And thanks a lot. Real quickly, as far as the Cuomo name is concerned, I'm 50 years old. I grew up pretty much in the Bronx my whole life. I've always kind of recognized Cuomo's name just from the legacy that his father left behind.
Uh-huh.
He may have done some things as a governor that's been pretty fair, but I just think it's just time for change. I like the progressive movement that's going on. Registered Democrat myself. I don't always vote party line because I think the Democrats have taken the black vote for granted for far too many years. And I think the Republicans are just far too polarizing for blacks to move towards them, even though we may like some of the issues that they represent. I think Cynthia Nixon, I like the things she represents. I like just the new voice, and I like the whole feminizing of politics today in terms of how many women are getting involved, are getting their voices heard, and the things that they represent. I really believe that the Democrats dropped the ball in the last election, and I believe that they are not a very strong party anymore. They let the Republicans push them around on issues of gerrymandering, just across the board, and it's like they have no clue what they're doing.
So you've had it with the Democratic establishment, and you're leaning Cynthia Nixon?
Absolutely.
Sorry. David, go ahead. Finish that thought.
Yes, I was saying that's pretty much it in a nutshell. And, you know, listen, I vote independent. I vote based on the people that are in front of me, not on the party.
David, thanks so much. Please call us again. And Emily in Mamaroneck, you're on WNYC. Hi, Emily.
Yes, hi. Hi, a long-time listener. But I just wanted to say really quickly, the points that the last caller made were really interesting and good regarding, you know, national shakeup, because I think the Democratic Party nationally is somewhat stalemated and annoying and irritating. But from what I've seen from Cynthia Nixon's campaign is that she's only focused on New York City. It feels like the race she's running is for mayor. And I strongly support Cuomo. I see absolutely no reason for her why it should change, and they have given absolutely nothing in terms of what's going to happen upstate, what's going to happen in Westchester. I feel like Cuomo is much more is the guy I know, and there's no other reason for me to change that.
Emily, thank you so much. Call us again. All right, so there's a little informal, unofficial, thoroughly unscientific poll of three callers, one for Nixon, one for Cuomo, one ambivalent, as you heard. And before we run out of time with Vivian Wang, state politics correspondent for the New York Times, Vivian, let me touch briefly on the lieutenant governor's race. More interesting than a lieutenant governor's race is usually allowed to be. Cuomo's current lieutenant governor, Kathy Hochul from the Buffalo area, being challenged by Brooklyn City Councilman Jumaane Williams, who's aligned with Nixon. That race is getting a little intense. For example, with this Hochul ad that questions Williams' commitment to gay and abortion rights.
I was married to Edie Windsor, a champion for gay rights, who took the fight for marriage equality all the way to the Supreme Court and won. Today, President Trump's Supreme Court nominee threatens our progress and our equality. 2 years after marriage equality became New York's law, Cynthia Nixon's running mate, Mr. Williams, said, and I quote, "I personally believe the definition of marriage is between a male and a female. New York will not go back. We need leaders like Governor Cuomo who are 100% personally committed to LGBTQ rights. New York must lead the way on LGBTQ rights, and we can count on Kathy Hochul and Governor Andrew Cuomo."
The voice of Judith Windsor, LGBTQ icon in a certain way, for Kathy Hochul. So Jumaane Williams has responded to that ad.
"I support marriage equality, and I support a woman's right to access safe and legal abortions. There had been muddled answers to some of these questions in the past, and I realized that. And so what I said, okay, it makes more sense just to make a declarative statement instead of trying to answer in some kind of nuanced way. And so I did that last year, very declaratively, that one, I support marriage equality."
All right. So that was Jumaane Williams, actually in a podcast interview in January, so before the ad came out, but certainly the issue had been raised in the lieutenant governor's race. Vivian, can you fact check any of that?
It all sounds about right. I mean, it certainly it seems to be something that Mr. Williams' campaign has recognized is a potential weak spot, and Ms. Hochul's campaign is definitely making as much of it as they can. And it definitely makes for a somewhat interesting dynamic, given that, you know, he and Ms. Nixon are running on this extremely progressive slate, challenging the incumbents from the left, and yet there are these issues, these two issues that are often, you know, rallying cries for the left that Hochul's campaign seems to genuinely have kind of an in on in attacking Giuliani.
But he's running as more of a progressive against her in other ways.
That's correct. I think he likes to criticize what he calls hashtag Democrats, you know, people who are hashtag liberals, people who, you know, rhetorically are very much in line with him but haven't necessarily been willing to put their money where their mouth is his line.
All right. Race on for lieutenant governor and governor in the Democratic primary in New York State. The election is on a Thursday this year, by the way. It's Thursday, September 13th. That'll be the New York State primary for those of you who want to mark that down on your calendars right away. Is that because September 11th is the Tuesday that week and they don't want to vote on September 11th? Any idea?
I don't know. That sounds like a legitimate reason.
But anyway, Thursday, September 13th. Obviously, we'll be doing a lot of coverage between now and then. Vivian Wang, New York Times, state politics correspondent. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.